Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David Messer, Chuck Pastor, Senator of Southern Congress, downtown the 12th town in Elgin, Texas. Today is September 1, 2023, or the 17th day of August, 2027. We will start our first service today with a song entitled Softly and Tenderly. Softly and tenderly Yahshuah is calling, calling for you and for me. See on the portals he's waiting and watching, watching for you and for me. Come home, come home, dear baby, come home. And the sleeping baby Yahshuah is calling, calling, oh sinner, come home. I should be tearing when Yahshuah is pleading, pleading for you and for me. I should be lingering, heed not his mercy, mercy for you and for me. Come home, come home, dear baby, come home. And the sleeping baby Yahshuah is calling, calling, oh sinner, come home. Now fleeting, the moments are passing, passing from you and from me. Chances are getting, death days are coming, coming for you and for me. I'm home. Come home, dear baby, come home. Turn the sleeping baby Yahshuah is calling, calling for sinner, come home. Oh, for the one the Lord he has promised, promised for you and for me. Though we have sinned, he has mercy and pardon, pardon for you and for me. Come home, come home. Part 2 of Moses on chapter 22, Patriarchs and Prophets, and we're on page 245 of the book, Patriarchs and Prophets. It says, at the court of Pharaoh, Moses received the highest civil and military training. For the monarch had determined to make his adopted grandson his successor on the throne. and the youth was educated for his high station. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in the words and in deeds. Acts 7:22. For his ability as a military leader made him a favorite with the armies of Egypt, and he was generally regarded as a remarkable character. Satan has been defeated in his purpose by the very decree condemning the Hebrew children to death had been overruled by the Yahweh for the training and education of the future leader of his people. For the elders of Israel were taught by the angels at the time for their deliverance was near, that Moses was a man whom Yahweh would employ to accomplish his work. Angels instructed Moses also that Yahweh had chosen him to break the bondage of his people. He supposed that they were to obtain their freedom by the force of the arm, expected to lead the Hebrew a host against the armies of Egypt. And having this in view, he guarded his affection, lest in his attachment to his foster mother or to Pharaoh, he would not be free to do the will of Yahweh. By the laws of Egypt, all who occupied the throne of Pharaoh must become members of the priestly caste, and Moses, as the heir apparent, was to be initiated into the mysteries of the national religion. This duty was committed to the priest, but while he was an ardent and untiring student, he could not be induced to participate in the worship of the gods. He was threatened with the loss of the crown and warned that he would be disowned by the princes should he persist in his adherence to the Hebrew faith. But he was unshaken in his determination to render homage to none save the one Yahweh, the maker of the heaven and earth. He reasoned with the priest and worshipped, showing the folly of their superstitious veneration of the senseless object. None can refute his arguments or change his purpose, yet for the time his firmness was tolerated on account of his high position and the favor with which he was regarded by both the king and the people. By faith, Moses, when he was come to the years, refused to be called the son of the Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer the affliction of the people of Yahweh than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Esteeming the reproach of Yahshua greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward, Hebrews 11, 24-26. Moses is fitted to take the preeminence among the great of the earth, to shine in the course of this glorious kingdom, and to sway the scepter of his power. His intellectual greatness distinguishes him above the great men of all ages. That is a historian, poet, philosopher, general of armies, and legislature. He stands without a peer. Yet, with the world before him, he had the moral strength to receive the flattering prospect of the wealth and greatness and fame. See the letter of the separate fishing with the people of Yahweh, and enjoy the pleasure of sin for a season. Moses had been instructed in regard to the final reward to be given to the humble and obedient servants of Yahweh. And word again sank to his proper insignificance in comparison. For the magnificent palace of the Pharaoh and the monarch's throne were held out as an inducement to Moses, but he knew that the sinful pleasures that make men forget Yahweh were in his Lord the court. He looked beyond the gorgeous palace, beyond the monarch crown, to the high honors that will be bestowed on the saints of the Most High in a kingdom untainted by sin. He saw by faith an imperishable crown that the King of Heaven would place on the brow of the overcomer. This faith led him to turn away from the lordly ones of the earth and join the humble poor, the despised nation that had chosen to obey Yahweh rather than to serve sin. Moses remained at court until he was 40 years of age. His thoughts often turned upon the object condition, the abject condition of his people, and he visited his brethren in their servitude and encouraged them with the assurance that Yahweh would work for their deliverance. Often, stung to remembrance by the sight of injustice and oppression, he burned to avenge their wrong. One day, while thus abroad, seeing an Egyptian smiting an Israelite, he sprang forward and slew the Egyptian, except the Israelite there had been no witness to the deed. And Moses immediately buried the body in the sand. He had now shown himself ready to maintain the cause of his people, and he hoped to see them rise to recover their liberty. He supposes brethren would have understood how that Yahweh, by his hand, would deliver them, but they understood not. Acts 7:25. They were not yet prepared for freedom. On the following day, Moses saw two Hebrews striving together. One of them evidently fought, for the Moses reproved the offender, who at once retaliated upon the reprover, denying his right to inheritance, and basically accusing him of crime. Who made thee a prince and a judge over us? He said, intendest thou to kill me as thou killest the Egyptian? For the whole matter was quickly made known to the Egyptian, and great exaggerated, soon reached the ears of Pharaoh. It was represented to the king that this act meant much that Moses designed to lead his people against the Egyptians to over to the government and just see themselves on the throne, and that there could be no security for the kingdom while he lived. He was at once determined by the monarch that he should die. But becoming aware of his danger, he made his escape and fled toward Arabia. So the Arab directed his course, and he found a home with the Jethro, the priest and prince of Midian. He was also a worshiper of Yahweh. After a time, Moses married one of the daughters of Jethro, and here in the service of his father-in-law as keeper of his flock, he remained 40 years. In the span of the Egyptians, Moses had fallen into the same error so often committed by his father, of taking into their own hands the work that Yahweh had promised to do. It was not Yahweh's will to deliver his people by the warfare, as Moses thought that by his own mighty power that the glory might be ascribed unto him alone. Yet, even this rash aspect, overruled by Yahweh to accomplish his purpose, Moses was not prepared for his great work. He has yet to learn the same lesson of the faith that Abraham and Jacob had been taught, not to rely upon the human strength or wisdom, but upon the power of Yahweh for the fulfillment of his promise. And there were other lessons that amid the solitude of the mountains, Moses was to learn patience, to temper his passion before he could govern wisely. He must be trained to obey his own heart, must be fully in harmony with the Yahweh before he could teach the knowledge of his will to Israel. By his own experience, he must be prepared to exercise his fatherly care over all who needed his help. Man would have dispensed with that long period of toil and obscurity, deeming it a great loss of time, but infinite wisdom called him who was to become the leader of his people to spend 40 years in the humble work of a shepherd. For the habits of the caretaker, of the self-forgetfulness, and tender solidity for his flock, thus developed, would prepare him to become the compassionate, long-suffering shepherd of Israel. No advantage of the human training or culture could bestow could be a substitute for this experience. Moses had been learning much that he must unlearn. For the influences that had surrounded him in Egypt, the love of his foster mother, his own high position as the king's grandson, the dissertation on every hand, the refinement, the subtlety, and the mysticism of a false religion, the splendor of the idolatrous worship, the solemn grandeur of the architecture and sculpture, all had left deep impressions upon his developing mind and had noted to some event his habits and character. Time change of the surroundings and communion with Yahweh could remove these impressions. It would require on the part of Moses himself a struggle as for life to renounce error and accept truth. But Yahweh would be his helper when the conflict should be too severe for the human strength. And all who have been chosen to accomplish a work for Yahweh, the human element is sin. Yet they have not been men of the stereotyped habits and charity. He was satisfied to remain in that condition. They earnestly desire to obtain wisdom from Yahweh and to learn to work for Him. Says the Apostle, if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of Yahweh, that giveth unto all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. James 1:5. But Yahweh will not impart to men divine light while they are content to remain in darkness. In order to receive Yahweh's help, man must realize his weakness and deficiency. He must apply his own mind to the great change to be wrought in himself. He must be aroused to earnest and persevering prayer and effort. Wrong habits and trusting must be shaken off, and it is only by the determined endeavor to correct these errors and to conform to right principles that the victory can be gained. Many never attain to the position that they might occupy because they wait for Yahweh to do for them that which He has given them power to do for themselves. All who are fitted for the usefulness must be trained by the severest mental and moral discipline, and Yahweh will assist them by uniting divine power with the human effort. Shut in by the bulwarks of the mountain, Moses was alone with Yahweh, for the magnificent temples of Egypt no longer impressed his mind with their superstition and falsehood. And the solemn grandeur of the everlasting hills, he beheld the majesty of the Most High, and in contrast realized how powerless and insignificant were the gods of Egypt. Everywhere the Creator's name was written, Moses seemed to stand in his presence and to be overshadowed by his power. Here his pride and self-sufficiency were swept away. In the stern simplicity of his wilderness life, the results of the chase and luxury of Egypt disappeared. Moses became patient, reverent, and humble, very meek above all the men which were upon the face of the earth. Numbers 12:3. Yet strong in the faith in the mighty Yahweh of the Jacob. As the years rolled on and he wandered with his flocks in the solitary places, pondering upon the oppressed conditions of his people, he recounted the dealings of Yahweh with his father and the promises that were the heritage of the chosen nation, and his prayers for Israel ascended by day and by night. Heavenly anger shed the light around him. Here, under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, he wrote the book of Genesis. The long years spent amid the desert solitude were rich and blessed. Not alone Himari and his people, but through the world and all succeeding ages. And it came to pass in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel sighed by reason of the bondage, and they cried. And their cry came upon Yahweh by reason of the bondage, and Yahweh heard their groaning, and Yahweh remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And Yahweh looked upon the children of Israel, and Yahweh had respect unto them, for the time for the Israel deliverance had come. And Yahweh's purpose was to be accomplished in a manner to pour contempt on the human pride. The deliverer was to go forth as the humble shepherd, with only a rod in his hand. And Yahweh will make that rod the symbol of his power, leading his flocks one day near Horeb, the mountain of Yahweh. Moses saw a bush in the flames, branches, foliage, and trunk, all burning, yet seeming not to be concerned. He drew near to view the wonderful sight, when a voice from out of the flames called him by the name. With the trembling lips, he answered, "Here am I." He was warned not to approach irreverently. "Put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is holy ground. I am the Yahweh of thy fathers, Yahweh of Abraham, the Yahweh of Isaac, and the Yahweh of Jacob." It was he who, as the angel of the covenant, had revealed himself unto the fathers in the ages past, and Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon Yahweh. Yeah. Humility and reverence should characterize the deportment of all who come into the presence of Yahweh. In the name of Yahshua, we may come before him with the confidence, but we must not approach him with the boldness of presumption, as though he were on a level with ourselves. There are those who address the great, the all-powerful and holy Yahweh who dwelleth in light unapproachable, as they will address an equal or even an inferior. There are those who conduct themselves in his house as they would not presume to be in the audience chamber of an earthly ruler. These should remember that they are in his sight, whom the seraphim alone, before whom angels veil their faces, Yahweh is ready to be reverenced. All who truly realize his presence will bow in humility before him. And like Jacob beholding the vision of Yahweh, they will cry out, "How dreadful is this place! This is none other but the house of Yahweh, and this is the gate of heaven." As Moses waited in the reverent awe before Yahweh, the words continue, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people, which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters, for I know their sorrow, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them out of that land into a good land and a large, unto a land flowing with the milk and honey. Come now, therefore, and I will send thee unto Pharaoh, that thou mayest bring forth my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." Amazed and terrified at the command, Moses drew back, saying, "Who am I, that I should go unto Pharaoh, that I should bring forth the children of Israel out of Egypt. If I was certain, I will be with thee, and this shall be a token unto thee, that I have sent thee. When thou hast brought forth the people out of Egypt, ye shall serve Yahweh upon this mountain. Moses thought of the difficulty to be encountered, of the blindness, ignorance, and unbelief of his people, many of whom were almost destitute of the knowledge of Yahweh. Behold, he said, when I come unto the children of Israel, and shall say unto them, the Yahweh of your fathers has sent me unto you, and they shall say to me, what is his name? What shall I say unto them? The answer was, I am that I am. Thus shalt thou say unto the children of Israel, I am has sent me unto you. Moses was commanded first to assemble the elders of Israel, the most noble and righteous among them, who had long grieved because of their bondage, and to declare to them a message from Yahweh with the promise of the deliverance. Then he was to go with the elders before the king and say to him, the Yahweh of the Hebrews hath met with us, and now let us go, we beseech thee, 3 days journey into the wilderness, that we may sacrifice to Yahweh or Yahweh. Moses was forewarned that Pharaoh would resist the appeal to let Israel go. Yet the courage of Yahweh's servant was not fail, for the Yahweh would make this the occasion to manifest his power before the Egyptians and before his people. And I will stretch out my hand and smite Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in the midst thereof. And after that, he will let you go. Direction was also given concerning the provision they were to make for the journey. The Yahweh declared, it shall come to pass that when you go, you shall not go empty, but every woman shall borrow of her neighbor, and of her that sojourneth in her house, jewels of the silver and jewels of the gold and raiment. For the Egyptians had been enriched by their labor unjustly exacted from the Israelites, and as the latter were to start on the journey to their new home, it was right for them to claim the reward of the years of toil. They were to ask for the articles of value, such as could be easily transported, and Yahweh would give them favor in the sight of the Egyptians. For the mighty miracles wrought for their deliverance would strike terror to the oppressors, so that the request of the bondman would be granted. Moses said before him, saw before him a difficulty that seemed insurmountable. What proof could he give his people that Yahweh had indeed sent them? Behold, he said, they will not believe me, nor hearken unto my voice, for they will say the Yahweh hath not appeared unto them. Evidence that appeal to his own senses was now given. He was told to cast his rod upon the ground, and he did so. It became a serpent. Moses fled from before it. He was commanded to seize it, and in his hand it became a rod. He was bidden to put his hand into his bosom. He obeyed, and when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprosy snow. Being told to put it in again into his bosom, he found on withdrawing it, it had been become like the other. By these signs, Yahweh assured Moses that his own people, as well as a Pharaoh, should be convinced that one mightier than the king of Egypt was manifest among them. But the son of Yahweh was still overwhelmed by the thought of the strange and wonderful work before him. In his distress and fear, he now pleaded as an excuse a lack of ready speech. O my master, O my Yahweh, I am not eloquent, neither hitherto before, nor since. Thou hast spoken unto thy servant, but I am slow of speech and of a slow tongue. He had been so long away from the Egyptian that he had not so clear knowledge and ready use of their language as when he was among them. The Yahweh said unto him, Who hath made man's mouth, or who maketh the dumb, or deaf, or the seeing, or the blind? Have not I, the Yahweh? To this was added another assurance of divinity. Now therefore go, and I will be with thy mouth, and teach thee what thou shalt say. But Moses still entreated that a more competent person be selected. These excuses at first proceeded from humility and difference, but after the Yahweh had promised to remove all difficulty and to give him final success, then any further shrinking back and complaining of his fitness showed the stress of Yahweh. It implied a spirit Yahweh was unable to qualify him for the great work to which he had called him, or that he had made a mistake in the selection of the man. Moses was now directed to Aaron, his elder brother, who, having been in daily use of the language of the Egyptians, was able to speak it perfectly. He was told that Aaron was coming to meet him. The next words from the Yahweh were an unqualified command. Now, thou shalt speak unto him and put words in his mouth, and I will be thy mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you what you shall do. And he shall be thy spokesman unto the people, and he shall be to thee instead of a mouth, and thou be to him instead of Yahweh, and thou shalt take this rod in thine hand wherewith thou shalt do signs. He could make no further resistance, for all ground verses were removed. For the divine command given to Moses found himself dissatisfied, slow of speech and timid. He was overwhelmed with a sense of his incapacity to be a mouthpiece to Yahweh to Israel. But having once accepted the work, he entered upon it with the whole heart, putting all his trust in Yahweh. The greatness of his mission called into existence the best powers of his mind. Yahweh blessed his ready obedience, and he became eloquent, hopeful, self-possessed, and well-fitted for the greatest work ever given to man. This is an example of what Yahweh does to strengthen the character of those who trust him fully and give themselves unreservedly to his command. Man will gain power and efficiency as he accepts the responsibility that Yahweh places upon him, and with his whole soul that seeks to qualify himself to bear them aright, however humble his position or limited his ability, that man will attain true greatness through trusting to the divine strength, seeks to perform his work with the fidelity. Had Moses relied upon his own strength and wisdom and eagerly accepted the great charge, he would have convinced his entire unfitness for such a work. The fact that a man feels his weakness is at least some evidence that he realizes the magnitude of the work appointed him, and that he will make Yahweh his counselor and his strength. Moses returned to his father-in-law and expressed his desire to visit his brethren in Egypt. Jethro's consent was given with his blessing. Go in peace. With his wife and children, Moses set forth on the journey. He had not dared to make known the object of his mission, lest they should not be allowed to accompany him. Before reaching Egypt, however, he himself thought it best for their own safety to send them back to the home in Midian. A secret dread of Pharaoh and the Egyptians, whose anger had been kindled against him 40 years before, had rendered Moses still more reluctant to return to Egypt. But after he had set out to obey the divine command, Yahweh revealed to him that his enemies were dead. On the way from Midian, Moses received a startling and terrible warning of Yahweh's displeasure. An angel appeared to him in a threatening manner, as if he would immediately destroy him. No explanation was given, but Moses remembered that he had disregarded one of Yahweh's requirements, yielding to the persuasion of his wife. He had neglected to perform the rite of circumcision upon their youngest son. He had failed to comply with the condition by which his child should be entitled to the blessings of Yahweh's covenant with Israel, and such a neglect on the part of their chosen leader could not but lessen the force of the divine precepts upon the people. The poor fearing that her husband would be slain performed the rite herself. And the angel then permitted Moses to pursue his journey. In his mission to Pharaoh, Moses was to be placed in a position of the great peril. His life could be preserved only through the protection of the holy angel. But while living in neglect of a known duty, he would not be secure, for he could not be shielded by the angels of Yahweh. In a time of trouble, just before the coming of Yahshua, the righteous will be preserved through the ministration of the heavenly angels, but there will be no security for the transgressor of Yahweh's law. Angels cannot then protect those who are disregarding one of the divine precepts.
This brings
in
to chapter 22. Now we'll go into chapter 23, the plagues of Egypt. We still have about
chapter 23, the plagues of Egypt. This chapter is based on Exodus chapter 5, verse 10, and being instructed by the angel, went forth to meet his brother, from whom he had been so long separated, and they met amid the desert solitude near Horeb. Here they communed together, and Moses told Aaron all the words of Yahweh who had sent him, and all the signs that he had commanded him. Exodus 4:28. Together they journeyed to Egypt, and having reached the land of Goshen, they proceeded to assemble the elders of Israel, and repeated to them all the dealings of Yahweh with Moses, and then the signs which Yahweh had given Moses were shown before the people.
For the people believed, and when they heard that Yahweh had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. Verse 31. Moses had been charged also with a message for the king. The two brothers entered the palace of the Pharaoh as ambassadors from the King of Kings, and they spoke in his name. Thus saith Yahweh, Yahweh of Israel, let my people go, and that they may hold a feast unto me in the wilderness. Who is the Yahweh that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? Demanded the monarch. I know not Yahweh, neither will I let Israel go. Their answer was, the Yahweh of the Hebrew has met with us, and let us go, we pray thee. 3 days' journey into the desert, and sacrifice unto Yahweh, O Yahweh, lest he fall upon us with the pestilence or with the sword. Tidings of them and of the interest they were exciting among the people had already reached the king. His anger was kindled. Wherefore do ye, Moses and Aaron, let hinder the people from their works, he said. Get you unto your burdens. Already the kingdom has suffered loss by the interference of these strangers. At the thought of this, he added, behold, the people of the land now are many, and ye make them rest from their burdens, and their bondage, the Israelites, had to some extent lost the knowledge of Yahweh's law, and they had departed from his precepts, for the Sabbath had been generally disregarded, and the exaction of their taskmasters made its observance apparently impossible. But Moses has shown his people that obedience to Yahweh was the first condition of the deliverance, and the effort made to restore the observance of the Sabbath had come to the notice of their oppression. For the king thoroughly roused suspected the Israelites of a design to revolt from his servant. This affection was the result of the idleness. He would see that no time was left them for the dangerous scheming, and he at once adopted measures to tighten their bonds and crush out their independent spirit. For the same day, orders were issued that rendered their labor still more cruel and oppressive. The move of the most common building material of that country was sun-dried brick, for the walls of the finest edifices were made of it, and then faced with the stone and the manufacture of brick employed great numbers of the bondmen. Pitch straw being intermixed with the clay to hold it together, large quantities of the straw were required for the work. For the king now directed that no more straw be furnished. The laborers must find it for themselves, while the same amount of brick should be exacted. This order produced great distress among the Israelites throughout the land. For the Egyptian taskmasters had appointed Hebrew officers to oversee the work of the people, and these officers were responsible for the labor performed by those under their charge. When the requirement of the king was put in force, the people scattered themselves throughout the land to gather stubble instead of straw, that they found it impossible to accomplish the usual amount of labor for his disfigure. The Hebrew officers were cruelly beaten. These officers supposed that their oppression came from the taskmasters and not from the king himself, and they went to him with their grievance. Their remonstrance was met by Pharaoh with a taunt. You are idle, you are idle. Therefore you say, let us go and do sacrifice to Yahweh. They were ordered back to their work with the declaration that their burdens were in no case to be lightened. Returning, they met Moses and Aaron and cried out to them, Yahweh looked upon you and judged because you had made our savor to be abhorred in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to slay us. As Moses listened to these reproaches, he was greatly distressed, for the sufferings of the people had been much increased. All over the land a cry of despair went up from old and young, and all united in charging upon him the disastrous change in their condition. In the bitterness of the soul, he went before Yahweh with a cry, Yahweh, wherefore hast thou no so evil and treated this people? Or is it that thou hast sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in thy name, he hath done evil to this people. Now that hast thou delivered thy people at all? The answer was, now shalt thou see what I will do this favor. For with a strong hand shall he let them go, and with a strong hand shall he drive them out of his land. Again he was pointed back to the covenant which Yahweh had made with the fathers, and was assured that it would be fulfilled. During all the years of the servitude in Egypt, there had been among the Israelites some who adhered to the worship of the Yahweh. These were sorely troubled as they saw their children daily witnessing the abominations of the heathen and even bowing down to their false god. In their distress they cried unto the Yahweh for the deliverance from the Egyptian yoke, that they might be freed from the corrupting influence of the idolatry. They did not conceal their faith, but declared to the Egyptians that the object of their worship was the maker of heaven and earth, as the only true and living Yahweh. They rehearsed the evidences of his existence and power from the creation down to the days of judgment. For the Egyptians thus had an opportunity to become acquainted with the religion of the Hebrews, but disdaining to be instructed by their slaves, they tried to seduce the worshippers of Yahweh by the promise of reward, and this failing by the threats and cruelty. The elders of Israel endeavored to sustain the sinking faith of their brethren by repeating the promises made to their fathers and the prophetic words of the Joseph before his death. Foretelling their deliverance from Egypt, some would listen and believe. Others, looking at the circumstances that surrounded them, refused their hope. For the Egyptians, being informed of what was reported among their bondmen, derided their expectations and scornfully denied the power of their Yahweh. They pointed to their situation as a nation of slaves and tauntingly said, if your Yahweh is just and merciful and possesses power above that of the Egyptian gods, why does he not make you a free people? They call attention unto their own condition. They worship deities termed by the Israelites false gods, yet they were a rich and powerful nation. They declared that their gods had blessed them with prosperity and had given them the Israelites as servants, and they gloried in their power to oppress and destroy the worshippers of the Yahweh. Pharaoh himself boasted that the Yahweh of the Hebrews could not deliver them from his hand. Words like these destroyed the hopes of many of the Israelites. The case appeared to them very much as the Egyptians had represented it was true, that they were slaves and must endure whatever their cruel taskmasters might choose to inflict. Their children had been hunted and slain, and their own lives were a burden. Yet they were worse than the Yahweh of the heaven, as the Yahweh was indeed above. O Yahweh, O God, surely, if the Yahweh were indeed above all gods, surely he would not thus leave them in bondage and idolaters, to idolaters, but to those who were true to Yahweh understood that it was because of the Israel's departure from him, because of their disposition to marry with the heathen nation, thus being led into idolatry, that the Yahweh had permitted them to become bondmen, and they confidently assured their brethren that he would soon break the yoke of the oppression. For the Hebrews had expected to obtain their freedom without any special trial of their faith or any real sufferings or hardship, but they were not yet prepared for the deliverance. They had little faith in the Yahweh and were unwilling patiently to endure their afflictions until he should see fit to work for them. Many were content to remain in bondage rather than meet the difficulties of tending removal unto a strange land, and the habits of some had become so much like those of the Egyptians that they preferred to dwell in Asia. Therefore, the Yahweh did not deliver them by the first manifestation of his power before Pharaoh. He overruled events more fully to develop the tyrannical spirit of the Egyptian king and also to reveal himself to his people. Beholding his justice, his power, and his love, they would choose to leave Egypt and give themselves to his servant. For the task of Moses would have been much less difficult had not many of the Israelites become so corrupted that they were unwilling to leave Egypt. For the Yahweh directed Moses to go again to the people and repeat the promise of the deliverance with a fresh assurance of the divine favor. He went as he was commanded, but they would not listen. Says the scripture, they hearken not for anguish of spirit and for the cruel bondage. Again, the divine message came to Moses. Go in, speak unto Pharaoh, king of Egypt, that he let the children of Israel go out of his land. In the discouragement, he replied, behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened unto me. How then shall Pharaoh hear of me? He was told to take Aaron with him and go before Moses and again demand.
Go before Pharaoh and again demand
that he send the children of Israel out of his land. He was informed that the monarch would not yield until Yahweh should visit judgments upon Egypt and bring out Israel by the signal manifestation of his power. Before the infliction of each plague, Moses was described as nature and effect, that the king might save himself from it if he chose. Every punishment rejected would be followed by one more severe until his proud heart would be humble and he would acknowledge the maker of heaven and earth as the true and living Yahweh. But Yahweh would give the Egyptians an opportunity to see how vain was the wisdom of the mighty men.
have favored the power of their gods when opposed to the commands of the Yahweh. He would punish the people of Egypt for their idolatry and silence their boasting of the blessings received from their senseless deity. Yahweh would glorify his own name, that other nations might hear of his power and tremble at his mighty act, and that his people might be led to turn from their idolatry and render him pure worship. Again, Moses and Aaron entered the righteous halls of the, or the lordly halls of the king of Egypt. They're surrounded by the lofty columns and glittering adornments, by the rich paintings and sculptured images of the heathen gods before the monarch of the most powerful kingdom then in existence, stood the two representatives of the enslaved race to repeat the command from Yahweh for Israel's release. For the king demanded a miracle and evidence of their divine commission. Moses and Aaron had been directed how to act in case such a demand should be made. And Aaron now took the rod and cast it down before the Pharaoh. It became a serpent. The monarch sent for his wise men and the sorcerers to cast down every man his rod, and they became serpents. But Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods. Then the king, more determined than before, declared the magicians equal in power with Moses and Aaron. He denounced the servants of the Yahweh as impostors and felt himself secure in resisting their demand. Yet while he despised their message, he was restrained by the divine power from doing them harm. This brings in my step to share contact. This is 11th hour call. Number 11, click on the audio archive. We're going to close now with a song.